Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm talking today with Dana Lyons, fund manager out of Chicago and the editor of the Lyons Share Report. Dana, it's always great getting your take on the markets. And just real quick at the beginning here, on your Lyons Share site and your service that you help investors with their investing strategies, you're having a little bit of a sale here, and there's some significance behind the amount of the sale. Would you mind sharing what you're doing as far as the discount, but also why you picked the number that you did?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, Chad. Yeah. Every year in commemoration of probably the most notorious day in the history of the U.S. stock market, October 19th, 1987, we run a sale on our site, the Lion's Share, offering annual subscriptions for 22.6% off, which was happened to be the loss of the Dow on October 19th, 1987. So right now through tomorrow, we're offering that discount. So you can sign up on the site lionsharepro.com or shoot me an email. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to field those. But yeah, through tomorrow, we've got our crash sale going on right now as we do every year.
Turning the crash into a bash. I like that you're putting a positive spin on it. And again, it's definitely nice that you're sharing that with our audience here. If people want to click on it, I will have a link down below this editorial for them to just go directly to your site. But let's get into the markets here. One question we had last time we talked, Dana, was not that we were going to see a crash, but we were still waiting to see if there'd be one more capitulative move in the markets that would really wash out the sentiment in the general markets, which is often a good place to build a base and start a move higher. You've recently quipped that it may be, you know, that we're starting that move higher now. How are you seeing the setup in the general markets from your vantage point?
Yeah, so referencing that crash, it's not a coincidence that we might be bottoming now around the same time we bottomed, you know, 34 years ago. This is a seasonally September, as we talked about the last few times I've been on. September into the first half of October is seasonally the weakest period of the year. But mid-October also happens to be the season that has marked the most significant bottoms historically in the U.S. market. So it would not be a coincidence, it would not be surprising for us to see some sort of a bottom in here nearby that launches the next leg up in the bull market. And as you mentioned, last time I was on, we were hoping for one more kind of a capitulatory move down, another plunge down in stocks that kind of brought about maybe a bigger spike in fear readings, a bigger spike in bearish investor sentiment than we saw in that move down in late September, early October. We have not seen that yet. It's not necessary. It's not a requirement in order to launch the next sustainable leg up. It's preferred because when you do get those types of fear readings in put-to-call ratios, in trading among inverse ETFs, that type of thing, some of the readings that we get in the volatility market, some of the term structure dislocations, those are consistently the most reliable buy signals going forward and the most consistent markers of the end of whether it's longer term or intermediate term decline. So we got decent readings in terms of bearishness, in terms of fear levels. Like I said, several weeks ago into that last sell-off, we've been bouncing since then. At this point, we've seen enough technical improvement in the charts as well as enough improvement among our breadth indicators to suggest that, okay, now it's probably not likely that we're going to see that plunge or not going to see that capitulatory move. Rather, we'll probably see some sort of a abbreviated retracement, some sort of a backing and filling, and we won't get those excessive fear readings prior to the launch higher, prior to kind of a springboard higher to the next leg up. So we've been talking about that two-way market for the last, it seems like, 6 months or so. And yeah, you know, it's there are no shortage of opportunities around there. It seems like it's a constant rotation of what's leading now. But I think it's all building up to a breakout and more of a sustainable new upleg in the bull market, a broader upleg in the bull market. At this point, we're in the process of dropping our shorts, our hedges, in the process of adding further long exposure on a net and gross basis and getting our portfolios ready for that next leg higher.
Well, Dane, I like that you play both sides of the market, and there are certain sectors that you'll short and there are certain sectors you'll go long based on what the readings and the metrics you get back in your quant analysis. When you see the kind of market we've been in for the last probably half year where it's the rotation trade from one sector to the next, where do you see the cheese moving? And you mentioned there were some sectors that were doing well that have kind of started to peter out, but there's kind of a move back into the value area. What areas are you looking at to place the long positions?
Yeah, it's funny. There's been almost nonstop rotation in the market where, you know, at the beginning of the year is almost everything was working. Then we've had kind of a rotation shift where more value sectors have taken over. And when you're in a trading range, it's kind of, it's easier. You buy the bottom of the range, you sell the top of the range. The rotation recently has made it a little bit trickier with some of those long-term leaders like technology and healthcare that were taking the mantle in the summer, kind of have fallen by the wayside to some extent. Healthcare, a laggard now, trying to get off the mat. Now, technology has come back to life. We see some groups coming back and moving to new highs again, like software, some cybersecurity names back to all-time highs. But it's moved back kind of from those growth names over to some of those value names again that were leading the way back in the spring, kind of with some of the reopening trends that were going on. Financials back to new highs. Energy moving to multi-year highs. Consumer discretionary, which I guess is more growthy, but that's back at new highs as well. So anything, any areas that held up well during this correction or consolidation and are threatening new highs, that's where we want to be because they're already poised to break out or have broken out, and you don't have that resistance in the charts above. So any types of names that have set themselves up like that, that's where we want to be. Those are the names that are, you know, going to be the big movers, and they don't have, like I said, they don't have the resistance. They don't have the technical stuff to get through on the charts. They've already cleared out the path and are ready to break out and move higher on a more sustainable basis.
Well, that brings up an interesting question then, because when there's resistance levels up above, it's clear to see what price levels people should be watching for where there may be some sticky points or where price may get rejected. But when something's breaking out to new highs, so for example, you mentioned the software and the data security. I must have seen 5 or 6 articles come out in the last week or two recommending cybersecurity and data security companies because they have been breaking out. When they don't have that overhead resistance, how long do you stay in it? How do you know you're not overstaying your welcome? But also at the same time, how do you capture the gains that could still keep coming? Because when something's breaking out to a new high, that's obviously signaling strength. How do you know when it's the right time to exit that position when it's getting a little overcooked?
Sure, that's a good question. So one, you don't want to jump off the trend while it's still in motion. So you basically don't want to get in your own way and jump off board. So you want to ride that trend as long as it's going. There are a couple techniques that we use, mostly tied to Fibonacci techniques, which where we can measure based on the prior sell-off, the prior consolidation, the prior range. You take certain measurements above that prior range, and you get kind of loose or rough targets that kind of create measurements of likely or, you know, higher odd scenarios of where stops, where trends might stop, where runs to new highs might at least pause or might signal decent spots for taking some profits, taking some money off the table. So take partial profits at those points and pretty much ride with the rest of the position. So we don't want to jump off the train, but if it is a key, at least on the Fibonacci analysis, some key target points that are hit, we want to, like you said, book some of those profits before you give them all back. But if we're still trading up near new highs, you don't want to jump off the train entirely. You want to let those profits run, as they say.
Yes, you got to let the winners run, but you're using Fibonacci extensions then based on previous moves and waves to figure out where a good level would be to at least take partial profits off.
Correct.
So that's helpful. Also, something you just mentioned was funny to hear in the same statement that, you know, energy prices are surging, which they absolutely are. If you look at crude oil or, you know, if you look at natural gas or just really the energy sector, it's been surging higher kind of as an inflationary pressure on the market. But you also mentioned consumer discretionary spending. You know, that sector has been surging higher. You would think that with the higher prices at the pump that people would have less discretionary money, but you're blocking out the news and the fundamental side, just looking at the data. Do you see the energy sector and the consumer discretionary sectors as still having some good legs in front of them, or are they getting a little overheated themselves?
No, absolutely. There's definitely room to run, I think. Energy has been kind of a laggard for years now, right? So it's been consolidating for a couple of years, just breaking out or threatening multi-year highs now. So, and you look some of the valuation, not the valuation, but the kind of, if you look at the weighting and energy compared to or relative to like the S&P, relative to the other sectors in the S&P or other indices, it's extremely low. So it's got a lot of room to expand as far as that is concerned. And if we are breaking out of this low base that energy's been in for some time, certainly it's got plenty of room to go. So I think it's got ample fuel to move higher, pardon the pun. And if you're looking at something like consumer discretionary, yes, we are kind of dismissing the narrative and just looking at the data, looking at the charts, whether it's on an absolute basis, you see whether it's the XLY consumer discretionary spider or the equal weight ETF, discretionary ETF, they're both breaking out to new highs. And on a relative basis, one risk on signal is when you compare the consumer discretionary to the consumer staples. And typically when the discretionary is moving higher relative to consumer staples, when you see that ratio moving higher, it's good for the broader market. And right now, after a little bit of consolidation, that metric, both on a weighted and unweighted basis, consumer discretionary is breaking out to all-time highs. So that is a good sign for that sector, and we would argue a good sign, historically speaking, for the broader market in general.
Well, Dana, just pivoting over from some of the more, I guess, U.S.-focused areas of the general markets and looking at some of the other country ETFs that you follow, you always are following some interesting stories that are developing based on the data that you're looking at. Last time we had talked, just to circle back around that discussion, we had discussed both Japan and Ireland. How are you seeing those set up currently?
Those two have not run off of those levels that we were hoping for at that time, which actually, we still like them, so it's good news if you're listening right now. I think there's still opportunity there, especially in Japan, which is in, I would say, the earlier stages of a long secular bull market. So plenty of opportunity there. Some of the quote-unquote pigs in Europe, which would represent some of the riskier assets globally, are set up to run at least in the near to intermediate term. Are still set up to run higher. So if that's the case, that would mean, you know, any sort of serious or major top or major bear market is probably still some time off. If you have countries like Ireland and Portugal set up for pretty good rallies here in the intermediate term. And then pivoting even from there around the world, a lot of the countries that are working right now are heavy, like resource or oil-related countries that have been doing well, still poised to run higher. Countries like Russia, Norway, that have been running, pretty much hitting new highs almost every day. And then you have some of the other more established emerging markets like India, that's also hitting new highs just about every day. So no shortage of opportunities there. I would mention maybe one, I like to mention one wild card every other time I'm on. I guess Indonesia might be the wild card right now. It's back testing those highs that it hit from 2000, I think back in 2018. You might see some backing off here in the short term, maybe some backing and filling, but that one looks set up for a breakout and a major run higher, similar to what we've seen in Vietnam and especially Taiwan over the last few years.
Yeah, Indonesia, that is a wild card, so I appreciate you mentioning that. And then you brought up a couple of the countries that had some commodity backing behind some of the movements they're seeing. So let's look at the commodities real quick as we wrap up. A lot of our audience follows the oil and gas sector, the move higher in copper, nickel, zinc, lead, some of the agricultural products. I know you mostly use the ETFs. Are there any commodity ETFs that you follow, and how do you see the setup in those, Dana?
We're following a lot of commodity ETFs right now just because basically they've been working well. So we want to go where the opportunities are. And right now, most of the commodities are on our screen from a long perspective. So commodities tend to be more volatile than the equities. So you got to be a little bit more selective in your entry points. But we do like crude oil. We'd like to buy it in a dip. Nat gas is pulling back, I think, giving you an opportunity to get long in here. Something like cotton. Take a look at the ETF. BAL would be your ticker symbol. Pulling back after a nice breakout recently. Looking to get involved in that. And copper, after testing, all-time highs, has consolidated nicely, starting to take shape again here, maybe setting up a breakout and potential sizable run higher in the next leg up. So you got copper actually down today nicely, giving you an opportunity to get in there. So those are some of the commodity-related, inflation-related names that are on our screen at this point.
Well, appreciate you sharing that with us, Dana. And is there a particular ETF you use to play copper with?
Copper right now, we are long the fund CPER would be the ticker symbol. I think it's the United States Copper Index. So currently we're long that. We're also looking at the miners, COPX, for a entry point there. But I think that those are setting up for a breakout above those former highs from about a decade ago, which may set up pretty sizable move up.
Okay. Well, appreciate you sharing that. And thanks again for sharing with our audience the discount on the Lion's Share Pro. You can go to lionsharepro.com or click on the link below this interview. Dana, we always appreciate getting your thoughts. Thanks for sharing some of the countries that have your attention and some of the sectors that have your attention. And we look forward to talking to you again next week.
Sounds good, Chad. Always a pleasure to be on.